Welcome to Michael's Green World. On this podcast, we often talk about technological innovation. Today, I'd like to explore a different kind of innovation. How science, business, policymakers, and passionate people can come together to turn good ideas into real solutions for our oceans. That is exactly what I would like to discuss today with Lucy Hunt from The Ocean Race. Lucy, welcome to Michael's Green World. Before we begin, could you briefly introduce yourself and tell us about your role at Ocean Race, please?
Thanks very much, Michael. Really nice to be here. So my name is Lucy Hunt. I'm a marine biologist from Southwest Ireland, and I've been working with The Ocean Race since 2017, on the 2017-18 edition of the race. And you might wonder, why is a marine biologist working with a sailing race? But I think we're going to find out a little bit more about that in our podcast, which is going to be cool to let you know. But I've been working through the evolution of ocean education and ocean literacy, and then with the Ocean Science Program, and also with our summits. And now I'm very lucky to direct all of these programs that are packaged under the Racing for the Ocean programs. So looking forward to getting stuck into that with you, Michael.
Very good, Lucy. I already feel that I can learn a lot this time around in particular. Lucy, for listeners who may not know the Ocean Race, particularly those like me who do not follow sailing, could you take us back to its origins, how the race began, and what is the Ocean Race today?
Yeah, sure. It's a very cool story, actually. It originated in the UK in a pub, actually, in Portsmouth, in a pub there. So that's its origins. And it was the Whitbread Brewery and the Royal Naval Sailing Association came together to start this wild idea of sailing teams sailing around the world.
So the idea took shape in the early 1970s, and on September 8th, 1973, the first Whitbread Round the World race set sail from Portsmouth.
It was extremely dangerous, full of adventure. You know, they didn't have, I suppose, the equipment that we have now. They were wearing woolly jumpers and sailing the Southern Ocean. But they were the race, I think, you know, it's always been about adventure, test of teamwork. You know, there's that winning mindset. And it's really evolved into one of the leading sporting events in the world and leading sailing events when it comes to innovation, which I know you're very interested in, and when it comes to also purpose. So it's changed from many different types of boats that used to be in the Whitbread around the world. And then the name changed to the Volvo Ocean Race. And then the name changed into the Ocean Race as we know it now. And through that, the journey of the boats have changed and innovated. And now the boats, they're like machines, flying machines that we have. And they're called IMOCAs. And they are foiling boats. So again, very innovative, very different type of boat. And they're also still able to contribute to science when they're out there sailing, sailing extremely fast, you know, nearly up to 40 knots. So setting records across the ocean and also having purpose as well.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So it started as a pure sports engagement. It's a new challenge type of thinking. So in the beginning, it has had nothing to do with sustainability or something like that.
You know, it's always been connected with the ocean. The ocean is our racetrack, of course, but it didn't have a large focus on sustainability or have a mission around protecting the ocean. But it's evolved over time. Like in 2001, we had our first science instruments deployed off the race. In the 2017-18 edition, we had our first ocean literacy and education program develop. And then in the 22-23 race, we had our Racing with Purpose program that's now evolved into our Racing for the Ocean program. And that's where we've really seen liftoff from the 2017-18 race with science equipment on board, the ocean education program that started in 5 languages and now is in 18 languages and, you know, used in something like 90 countries around the world. And now we have our summits program in different countries, bringing high level people together to take action for the ocean. And yeah, like, you know, it's really changed. We also make sure that the rules within our race are applied for sustainability, innovation, and access and equity as well. Like in this race that we now have in this year, 2026, we have the Ocean Race Atlantic, and there's a regulation in there around 50-50 crew members, so male and female crew. So giving more opportunity to women in the sport of sailing as well. So looking at our access and equity elements, as well as sustainability, and as well as innovation and ocean health.
You said there was this moment when you started bringing ocean literacy along with the race. Maybe that was the starting point of bringing the purpose in. Is that about right? And if that was like that, why did it happen, or what triggered that?
Yeah, so from 2017-18, we were able to access some funding from some of our partners and sponsors that were interested in helping us create further impact and positive impact, and raising awareness as well around the ocean and the issues of the ocean. So that was the first year that we aligned with the UN Clean Seas Program. And that was a focus on ocean plastics and how we can protect the ocean from plastic, single-use plastics. And there was a real mission around that. We also had our first ever microplastic sampler on board, where the boat was able to take water samples. And we were able to work with our scientific partners to measure the microplastics in the ocean. And I think back then in 2017-18, about 85% of the samples had microplastics in them. And unfortunately, in our 2022-23 race, we found with that same sampling technique in the Round the World race, all of the samples had microplastics in them. So definitely the 2017-18 race was a turning point for the race, where we had fantastic partnerships that allowed us to create larger impact and outreach as well. And I suppose one of our key missions now, and you could say our North Star, assuming as we're talking about sailing, is the UN Ocean Decade Challenge 10, Restoring Society's Relationship with the Ocean. So we have this amazing platform, elite sporting platform that reaches millions of fans. And, you know, millions of people will come and visit the sailing race when we're in the host cities. So really, we have the opportunity to engage people, to help them understand the ocean better and the ocean's place on our planet, and how it allows us to live here on the planet, and how we can all be stewards or champions for the sea.
What I find so powerful is that you're using an elite sporting platform not only to entertain people, but to make the ocean visible. Here in Switzerland, the ocean can feel very far away. And yet, what happens in the ocean is closely connected to what we experience here, from changing weather patterns to the wider climate system. The challenge is that so much of the ocean is out of sight and therefore often out of mind. Sailing changes that. It gives people a reason to look, to care, and to listen. Through the fascination of the race, you can reach millions of people, including many who might otherwise never engage with ocean issues. Was that part of the idea from the beginning?
Yeah, for sure. We've been able to tell our story to people who are close to the ocean already and you know, our sailors who would tell their stories of the ocean and are our ambassadors for the ocean, you know, they help people connect with the ocean as well. But I think our sporting event, it calls out to a lot of different people, not just sailors, you know, because we work with different industries, boat builders, we work with our partners who come from many different areas and arenas. And we want all of the people that we're engaged with, or we say the Ocean Race family who work with us, to be engaged in the Racing for the Ocean mission as well. So it's a very important part of what we do as a race. And we have a platform. Let's use it for good, and let's use it for the good of the ocean that is so close to our hearts and our sports and our event.
So this is where the purpose of the Ocean Race becomes clear. It has evolved from being primarily a sporting event into a platform that connects sport, science, business, and public engagement around the ocean. What makes it distinctive is not any one of those elements, but the way you bring them together and turn the visibility of the race into wider action. Would that be a fair description?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I suppose in some ways you could think of us as a catalyst, because we bring so many different facets together and so many different entities together around the ocean. So we have the emotional power of sport and bringing that together with a mission to protect the ocean, I think is very valuable. And it's a great way to work with different organizations as well when we're in the event space and when we have this huge sailing race that can draw on, you know, parallels between living on a boat and the idea that there is no planet B. When you're on a boat and you're out on a long leg, you don't have anything more than what you have on your boat. Here on our planet, we should really be thinking in that mindset as well. So you can use those sort of parallels, but also the parallel of the sailor's mindset. When a sailor is going out to sea in our race, they have a winning mindset and they want to win the race. They're not getting into the race to lose the race. And when we think of the challenges that we're faced with today, especially around climate, and you know, you spoke about some of the issues inland, we need to collaborate like a team that's in our race, and we need to have a winning mindset. How do we win, or how do we become resilient enough to make it a win for ourselves, you know, when we're faced with climate change and adaptation and things like that? So I think there's a lot of things that we can learn from our sailing teams and apply to our ocean actions and missions when we're collaborating and working with different entities.
That raises a question about your role. Are you primarily a communicator, a convener that brings the right people together, a platform for testing new scientific and social ideas, or an advocate for policy change? Or is your real strength precisely that you combine all of these, connecting people, testing solutions, influencing the wider debate, and giving people a sense of agency and hope? How do you see that balance?
Michael, I think it's a bit of everything that you've just mentioned, really, because we do many different things, from our science program on board to our summits and convening. And, you know, we're able to bring many different people together. So it can be industry, science, sports people, youth. And when you bring this diversity of people together to work for the ocean, it is, again, like catalyzing the work that needs to get done. And I think these interdisciplinary approaches are really important when we talk about ocean action and awareness. And it's not just communications, even though we do communications and we definitely communicate well about our science program and the ocean and ocean action that can happen. But it's about driving action as well. And that's what we see when we have our summits. So when we invite ministers or policymakers, you know, we're sharing best practices, but we're also nudging policy and nudging action on a high level, which is really important to us. And also, we work with local organizations in different areas that we're going to ahead of the race arriving there and ahead of a summit arriving there, so that we know what are the priorities for that area and see how we can help nudge those priorities. And when we think about the ocean education, you know, we work with the local education departments to make sure that the education program is brought in to those areas before we arrive there. And then the schools have an amazing experience at our, you know, festival for the sea and sailing at our ocean life parks. So it's a real integrated approach, and it helps drive action and awareness, because we're able to emotionally connect people with the ocean and allow them to see easy ways that they can get involved more with the ocean, get involved more with sailing, but also get involved in taking action for the ocean.
So Lucy, you have explained the purpose and this integrated approach very clearly, but purpose ultimately has to lead to action. How does the ocean race turn that purpose into real-world impact? What are the main ways in which you make a difference? Through education, science, policy, or other forms of action? Could you give us a few concrete examples of what has happened because the ocean race exists?
Yeah, so I suppose where do I start? But there's a lot of different things. If we think about ocean education and the program that we've developed, we have ocean education for 12 to 16 year olds with different modules that educators can use. And it helps the young generations understand why the ocean is important, because of course we need to know that before we even want to protect it. And then also steps that people can use. But within the educators pack, there's a lot of social emotional learning techniques used, and they can use them in their classrooms, in their clubs, and it's active learning as well. And then for the older generations, for 12 to 16 year olds, there's a lot of project-based learning. So if school is in Switzerland and they're not close to the ocean, they can still do a project that helps them connect their place in its relationship with the ocean. And we've seen lots of nice projects come from these different education programs. And we've even seen where a youth group in Rhode Island, which was one of our stopovers, came together and they proposed a plastic bottle bill to their local government, having taken on our education program, which is called Generation Ocean. That's one example of something very positive that's come from our education program. And the program has been highlighted in many different awards, and by IUCN, Sports for Nature, as a best practice. Also, the World Sailing has also recognized it as a great program. And we've worked with World Sailing on sailing clubs, sustainability education pack as well. So there's a lot of resources there for people to use. And we're seeing positive impact come from it. I am also doing a part-time PhD, which focuses on the learning program influencing ocean literacy and pro-environmental behavior. So studying how it's actually creating change, if it is creating change. But thankfully, we do see change happening. Then, so that's the education program, very much youth-focused, and is already being used in 90 countries around the world by over 200,000 children with their educators. Obviously, we have our science program on board, which you've heard a little bit about, but we take climate data, ocean climate data, from our essential ocean packs that are on board. And that helps scientists take the pulse of the ocean. So really getting to understand how healthy the ocean is. And this data is shared data. So it goes to a number of different ocean observing platforms, and then it helps inform policy. It can also help the scientists calibrate and measure a better quality data as well. So we're helping on that front, as well as getting innovative with engineers and scientists in putting new equipment on board. You know, previously in the 2017-18 race, the equipment was much heavier, took a lot more energy, but now 2023, it's a lot lighter, it's more resilient, and it takes less energy from the boat as well. So working on innovation the whole time. Another great example, I suppose, tangible example, is how we've worked through our summits on nudging policy. And with Itajaí in Brazil, we were able to work with local NGOs to understand what were some of their key things that they wanted to happen around the ocean in their region. And so one of it was ocean literacy and ocean education and creating ocean culture in their city, which is an ocean city. And then also the recognition of the ocean's inherent rights, which we were very much working closely on as well. So we helped nudge that policy by having the mayor sign a declaration for the ocean at our summit in Itajaí in 2023. And then the local organization was able to use that to help further the policy change in the region. And about 9 months after we left, there an ocean bill was written in for ocean education to be in all of the schools in the region, and also to recognize the ocean culture and recognize the inherent rights of the ocean. So for protection in that region as well. So there are some of our key things. And I think what's important with change in our industry as well is we don't just, you know, talk about these things, we actually implement them ourselves. So when we look at sustainability, we have our sustainable event excellence. So we try and reduce our footprint as much as possible. But we also look at how we can educate our internal team on ocean literacy, you know, so we're walking the walk as well. We're not just doing it externally. It has to happen from inside our own team as well. So it's really important that it comes from that place. And I suppose, you know, sometimes people say, oh, you have a Racing for the Ocean sustainability department, but actually our whole team is Racing for the Ocean. It's not just a department.
Yes, that distinction is very important. Racing for the Ocean is not simply the responsibility of one department. It has to become part of the culture of the entire organization. And that culture has to be built from within. You've described several ways in which this purpose becomes action. Ocean literacy and education, scientific research, and sustained engagement with policymakers. Let me add one more dimension, local action. At each stopover, how do you turn the global visibility of the ocean race into something relevant and lasting for the host city and its communities?
Yeah, so again, it's working very closely with our host cities we're actually visiting and making that plan together. So we have many guidelines around sustainability and a sustainable event, but then we also work with them to make sure that they are doing the best practices that they can possibly do in that region. So, you know, when it comes to sustainability and sustainable actions and hosting a sustainable event, looking at what can they do, like using reusables over single use, of course, like always trying to avoid the single use. Looking at food and beverage, what can we provide that is the most sustainable for that region? So it's not coming in like a helicopter approach and saying you must do this, and these are the only things you can do. It's actually working again in that integrated approach to seeing what's possible in that region. And let's do the best practice that can happen in that region. So we work with them months in advance to create a sustainable event in each of the regions, and to create a super event as well, you know, where it is like a festival, where the culture is shown, there is the music, there is opportunity to go see the boats, there is the schools program where you can get up to 10,000 kids coming down over the course of the stopover, you know, so there's a lot of different things that we do. And then again, if we have a summit or if we know we can work with high level people, we'll discuss with the NGOs that are doing the groundwork all the time to understand what are the priorities and what are the key things that they might like to see change. And that's where we can come in and be that catalyst and nudge again. And yeah, and I suppose we give visibility also because we communicate. So we give visibility to a commitment that is made, and then that commitment is global and public. So the local agencies and organizations can use that then again to help their mission in trying to protect the ocean.
Sustainability also means asking whether the impact lasts. When you return to a host city, do you look back and assess what remained, what changed, and what was learned?
Yes, so we're very fortunate to be able to return to our host cities and see the changes over time that have happened. And also we check in with the host cities after we have finished up. So we continue the relationship, continue to see how they've developed in certain areas, if the education program is still being used in some of the schools that used it prior to the race arriving. And then we are looking at creating now a legacy report to showcase what has happened in the host cities that we've visited in the past. So that will be a new type of research that we'll do. But we do have our economic and impact reports for every race. But this is something that we're looking at a lot more longer term legacy. So we're going to look at into doing that now as well.
These reports are valuable resources in their own right, so we'll include some of them in the show notes. They also show that this is not about one-off campaigns or short-term visibility. It is about creating lasting cultural change in how people understand, value, and care for the ocean.
Yeah, for sure. It's really important. And I think it is, as you say, Michael, the ocean culture. And we can do that on many different levels with the race, from youth to high level industry, you know, the sports people as well. Just a couple of weeks ago, we held a science communication workshop for the teams so that the teams feel empowered to talk about the ocean science program more. Like, they do a great job talking about what they see out there and being ambassadors for the ocean, but it's nice for them to really feel confident in speaking about our science program as well. So we support them in that also, and hold workshops and provide resources for them to communicate better around ocean science. So that's another sort of tangible thing that we do. Yeah.
Let me make that a little more concrete. Through Redes Fantasma, the Swiss nonprofit organization I helped lead, we work closely with Ocean Patrol Association in Portugal. We have discussed the possibility of a beach cleanup around the future ocean race stopover in Portugal, although nothing has been formally agreed yet. But it illustrates the broader question. How important are local NGOs and community partners to the way the ocean race works? What can they contribute in terms of local knowledge, trust, participation, and lasting impact that a global organization could not achieve on its own?
I think working with local NGOs is crucial. Like, I don't think we would do it any other way than to work with local NGOs. There's expertise there already. It would be silly for us to come in and think that we know it all, you know? There's a lot to be said for the ground up approach, you know, working within the communities, whether it's on beach cleans or other innovative science projects, you know, we would look into how we can collaborate in those areas.
Say, Lucy, when you choose partners, especially local NGOs, what matters most to you? What do you look for in terms of expertise, credibility, shared purpose, and the ability to create lasting impact?
So if we want to partner with a local NGO, I suppose it would be looking at what sort of projects they're running. So are they doing marine plastics? Do they do ocean data initiatives, things like that? Education partners as well. So is there an organization working in local ocean education that would like to use our resources? Or is there an organization that has ocean documentaries that we could showcase in our facilities that we have on site in the Ocean Life Park so that people can connect with their local ocean? And, you know, we will be there for anything from 5 days to 3 weeks, but the local NGO will be there for much longer after us. So if somebody wants to take action, they need to reach out to their local NGO and they can take local action for sure. So that's how we would go about it, really, in promoting the local NGOs that are there on site.
This conversation gives me hope. You are working with young people, scientists, policymakers, cities and communities, while the reach and emotional power of sport allows you to engage people who might otherwise never think deeply about the ocean. Many people say that it is too late, or that one individual or organization cannot make a difference. But if we wish we had started 20 years ago, then today is the moment that future generations will wish we had started. The ocean race shows how the energy and visibility of sport can bring very different worlds together and turn concern into action. That gives people a credible reason for hope. I now understand much more clearly why the ocean race exists and how it has evolved. So let me finish with one simple question. If our listeners were to take away just one sentence from this conversation, how would you describe what the ocean race is today?
Great question. So the ocean race is an incredible sailing platform and race that enables positive change for the ocean through emotional connection and through an incredible sailing event.
Lucy, thank you very much. This conversation has given us a much clearer understanding of how the ocean race combines sporting adventure with purpose, science, education, and real-world action for the ocean. Thank you for joining me, and thank you to everyone listening. You'll find links to the ocean race and the program we discussed in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow Michael's Green World in your podcast app and share it with someone who may also be interested in the future of our ocean. That helps more people discover these conversations.
Thanks so much, Michael. That's been fantastic. Really nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Lucy. Goodbye, everyone.